Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Some Today on It's My House of Women, we're supposed to be doing Mobile House Monday, but this is building up to Mobile House Monday. Today's podcast is titled The Enslavement of Money and Wealth Metrics. The Enslavement of Money and Wealth Metrics. I feel that most people don't have a clear understanding of what money is and the distinctions of money. And if you don't know that, the fundamental distinctions here, it could cause you some hardships or experiences that you don't particularly like. So we're going to introduce you to some new vocabulary and have you take a look at what's your metric of money? What's your metric of wealth? Those are two different concepts, but what's your metric of money and wealth? And I'm going to throw out some words that I think you might want to add into your vocabulary. In any event, let's go with a basic definition of what a metric is.
We've all heard of metrics, both in the context of business and in our personal lives. But why do metrics matter? Hi, I'm Sean Thompson, and today I'm going to teach you what metrics are and why they can be incredibly useful in both business and in life. So what is a metric? Well, first let's start with the definition. A metric is simply a numerical measurement of something. That could be on a single data point or a set of data over a period of time. Metrics are quantitative rather than qualitative, meaning that they are numerical. So why does that matter? Well, that makes metrics objective rather than subjective, which we'll get to in a little bit more detail later. So what are some examples of a few common metrics that we see in everyday life? Well, any owner of a car is familiar with the metric of miles per gallon. Miles per gallon simply measures the number of miles a car can travel on a single gallon of gasoline. That's what makes miles per gallon a standard measurement of fuel efficiency. In the business world, a common metric that measures financial performance is net profit margin. Net profit margin is simply the amount of money that is left over after all of the expenses of the business is paid. It's what belongs to the shareholders or owners of the business. So as you can see, metrics can be pretty wide-ranging, from the context in the business world also to our everyday lives. But they all share the common attribute of being numerical. So why do metrics matter? Well, metrics are very useful in providing context. By context, I mean that metrics give you insight into the way something is performing, but on a relative or comparative basis. For example, if your car gets 25 miles per gallon and your friend's truck gets 10 miles per gallon, you can quickly assess the performance and fuel efficiency of your car compared to their truck and realize that your car is much more fuel efficient than their truck. You use the metric of miles per gallon in the context of all vehicles and were quickly able to assess fuel efficiency and relative performance. Let's look at another example, but this time from the business world. Let's say that Joe owns a machine shop, and Joe's machine shop earns a net profit margin of 15%. Joe now has a benchmark or metric of 15% that he can now go and use to assess his company's performance relative to other machine shops. Let's say on average, all else being equal, that other machine shops earn a net profit margin of 18%. So Joe can take his 15% net profit margin and compare that to the 18% net profit margin of other like machine shops and see that he's got a little bit of room to improve there on his net profit margin. Joe now has an objective, clear assessment of how his business is performing to other machine shops, all else being equal. Now notice I said all else being equal a few times there. It is critical that when you're using metrics to assess comparative performance, that you make sure that you're doing it on an apples-to-apples basis. So going back to my miles per gallon example, I compared a car to a truck. That is not apples to apples. What I should have done is compared your car, which gets 25 miles per gallon, to another car that is very similar, and compared that to actually assess whether your car was more fuel efficient. The same goes for any analysis, whether it's on your own business or if you're analyzing another business. Make sure that when you analyze metrics that you're doing it on a comparative basis that is apples to apples. One simple mistake I see business owners and employees make is when they're trying to compare the month-over-month performance of a specific measurement. The typical comment will go something like this. Well, March was a great month because revenue was up X percent from February. Hold on. What's wrong with that statement? Well, it may be true that revenue was up in March over February on an absolute dollar term, but that is not an apples-to-apples comparison because since the inception of the calendar, we all know that March has had more days than February in it. So by default, it's likely that the revenue increase in March was solely due to those additional days in the month. So how do we solve for this and actually assess relative performance? Well, one way we could do that is by using a normalized metric. So if we take our total revenue for each of those respective months, and divide it by the number of days in the month, or better yet, working days in the month, what we come up with is a normalized metric of revenue per day. So we can simply take that normalized metric of revenue per day and objectively assess whether March did have higher revenue on a revenue per day basis. We now have an apples to apples way of comparing performance. So what have we learned? Well, we've learned that metrics are a numerical measurement of something that can be used to assess relative performance if done so in the right context. So next time when you're analyzing how well something performed, keep this lesson in mind. If you enjoyed this video, please like it. And if you're interested in more videos like this one that cover business and analytics, be sure to subscribe. Thanks for watching.
Now we're going to together. Okay, today's podcast is titled The Enslavement of Money and Wealth Metrics. Most people around the globe measure wealth, even self-worth, or what a person's worth, based on government-issued legal tender. Also known as money. But there are different types of metrics, and if you look at the history of man, government-issued legal tender is really sort of contemporary in use. But people would get a broader look or look at the distinctions of measuring different metrics of wealth. I think a lot of their financial problems could be cleared up. So now what we're going to do today is we're going to use the backdrop of the TV show The Wire. And we're going to take a look at their metric, and their metric is money. Their metric is government-issued legal tender, the United States dollar. And we're going to take a look at what some of these people, what they will do in order to get this government-issued legal tender called the United States dollar. Let's go to our first example here. And once again, the metric that they're using to do what they're doing is all based on the United States dollar. And then I think you'll see the relation. This is why I called this podcast today, The Enslavement of Money.
What up, man?
Same old, same old.
What's up with that boy?
Oh, man. He just a punk, that's all. D put him back on the count, though.
A word? I heard he was out the game.
He was, but he back now.
Where he been at?
At his granny house, he says.
His granny, huh? I heard he damn near shit his pants when he saw what happened to Omar's bitch.
He just ain't built for this, man. Heart pump Kool-Aid.
Right. What about you? You built for this shit?
No doubt.
You ready to put the work in? You got heat?
Okay, let me break down that scene. Bodie is a drug dealer, and his superior, Stringer Bell, is a drug kingpin. His superior, Bodie, sells for Stringer Bell and his partner, Avon Barksdale. And these characters are based on real people. In any event, Stringer Bell asked Bodie to essentially kill Wallace. Now, Wallace is Bodie's colleague and friend, and one of his best friends. But Stringer Bell just asked Bodie to kill his best friend. Why? Because the metric that they have in common, Stringer Bell and Bodie, is the United States dollar, and that particular metric that they use is more important to Bodie than the friendship, the social capital of Wallace, who is a 16-year-old teenager.
Where y'all at? All right, when I find y'all, y'all gonna get it. Better come out now. What? Where y'all at? Yo, I'm not even playing with y'all right about now. You hear me? Game over. Fuck y'all at? Alright, when I find y'all, I'm beating y'all asses. Now where y'all at? Alright, don't let me find y'all. Yo, check this poop. Little man left us playing shit.
Weak-ass nigga, man. You should have stayed down in the country, man.
Yo, you my niggas, yo.
You fucking brought this on yourself, man.
You boys.
You brought this on yourself.
Ain't gotta be like this, yo. We niggas, man, BC, remember that?
Come on. You wetting your fucking pants like you a little boy. Be a man. Stand up like a motherfucking man.
My niggas, yo.
Man, you said you was a fucking man. Stand up straight.
That's us, man.
Do it, goddammit, if you're gonna...
Garcia Wallace? We're looking for your son. Thought you might help us out as to his whereabouts.
Where are who? Shit, I'd be looking for...
It wasn't me who fucked up.
Oh, really? So who did? Why the fuck are we here?
Listen, all you need to do is keep your head through the bail hearing. Got a good shot of bringing you home here.
Then what? You gonna take the weight for all the shit in the trunk of that car? Where's Wallace at? Where's the boy, String?
D'Angelo, shut your mouth.
Where's Wallace? That's all I want to know.
Kid, you better think.
Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? String. String. Look at me. Look at me! Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh?
I don't want this Payless man, motherfucker, representing me. I'm gonna get my own man. All right? So just get back in your car and get the fuck back down south.
All right, you stupid motherfucker. You made the decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. Where's Wallace at? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, String? String! Where the fuck is Wallace?
Now, D'Angelo, also a drug dealer. Now, that scene takes place when he's in jail. And, of course, D'Angelo, he had money as a metric also, a primary metric also. However, he drew the line. Him and Wallace was friends, and he, if you watch the TV show The Wire, he looked out for and even protected Wallace. But, of course, he couldn't save him from his fate because he was incarcerated and Stringer Bell went to Bodie to get things done. However, let's go back to Bodie. Bodie, once again, is a corner drug dealer. So let's go to a scene where Bodie, out there getting that government legal tender, you know, those Benjamins, those Jacksons, those, you know, those dollar bills. Let's see what happens to Bodie. And remember, Bodie's primary metric that ranks above friendship. And you know what, by the way, Bodie lived with his grandmother. Lived with his grandmother. So here's a drug dealer. Didn't have a car, didn't have any transportation, living at his grandmother's house. So he wasn't making a whole lot of money. And let me matter of fact, let's get accurate here. He wasn't receiving a whole lot of legal tender, commonly called the United States dollar. So he didn't realize that social capital is really more valuable than government-issued legal tender. Most people don't know that. But let's see what happens to Bodie.
Well, Spider, what's the count?
I don't even think we're going to sell out today, man.
Yo, Bodie. Yo, Bodie.
Yo, Bodie, you better run, yo.
Yo, this is my corner. I ain't running nowhere.
Yo, Bodie, is you crazy?
put me up in one of them empty ass hospitals.
Bodie. Come on, man.
Okay, this is an audio show. Now we need to have more video with this, but in any event, in that scene, Bodie gets his comeuppance. Bodie, whose metric was the United States, the legal tender of the United States dollar, which he killed one of his best friends for, one of his colleagues, one of his road dogs, he killed him, and he's living at his grandmother's house now. Bodie gets his comeuppance while he's on a corner that he did not own. The city of Baltimore owns the corner. Here he was trying to defend real estate that he did not own for the right to sell his product, which happened to be drugs. And in exchange for government-issued legal tender, of which he would go buy whatever he bought, clothes, shoes, food, you know, the basic stuff. That was his metric. He got killed for it. Bodie was probably about, the character of Bodie was probably about 21 years old when he was killed in the TV show The Wire. That character. Now, once again, today's podcast is titled The Enslavement of Money and Wealth Metrics. Now, like I say, what we want to do is we want to, and we might go through this throughout the week, we want to throw out other wealth metrics so you won't be as enslaved if you happen to be enslaved by government-issued legal tender. If you're in the United States, it's the United States dollar. If you're Europe, many European countries, they have the euro. That's their government-issued currency, legal tender. If you're in England, it's the pound, the British pound. You know, they have different currencies throughout Africa, different currencies throughout Asia, different currencies throughout South America. All right. But if we look at the history of man, it's only a small amount of time that man has really dealt with government-issued legal tender. The currency of man, historically speaking, is your skill set. You know, can you grow your own food? Can you catch your own food? Your money was your skill set. Adam and Eve, right off the bat, in the Garden of Eden, his skill set was, the first profession was basically farming. That's the first profession. The second profession, and that was his money. Farming was his money. Being a farmer was his skill set. That was his currency. The second profession, the second skill set, the second currency, actually third, because the first was social capital. Adam had a social capital with God. had social cap with Eve because they had to work together in that garden. Social capital was that's the first type of money. Relationships. Relationships are more valuable than money. Farming, first profession. Next profession is when they discovered that they were naked, they had to sew some fig leaves together or whatever they had to sew together in the garden. Learn how to make your own clothes. A seamstress, a tailor, whatever you want to call it. That's the second profession. All of those are metrics. If you know how to make your own clothes, you don't have to spend hundreds or thousands of dollars clothes from somebody else. You got a skill set that you can go anywhere around the world, and if you need a pair of pants, a shirt, socks, what have you, in some cases, if you even know how to make your own shoes, be a cobbler, you're good. You don't need government-issued legal tender, or you don't need as much of it. Because, like I say, if you look at the history of man, man's, what 200,000 years old, something like that. Man's been around for a long time. There were thousands of years where there was no such thing as government-issued legal tender. It might be food. It might be shelter. These are all forms. These are all different metrics. All right, so we got social capital, skills like Jesus. Jesus Christ, and we're not, you can be stone cold atheist. His currency, based on his skill set, he was a carpenter. Now there are different types of carpenters. I don't know specifically what type of carpenter he was, because you got landscape carpenters, you got boat carpenters, you got carpenters who can make a house, make furniture. I don't know specifically what type of carpenter that he was, but that was his money. That was his currency, a carpenter. That was his metric. Now, another metric that Jesus had was, and I'm not trying to sell anybody on religion, like, so you can be a stone cold atheist, I'm just using this as an example, was social capital. Because the first thing he did right off the bat as he was starting his ministry is he was doing a lot of social networking. And that's how he got those 12. He didn't get those 12 disciples all on day one. He went to this location, networked, and, who knows how many people that he talked to before he even got the first one or two disciples, or as I like to call them, partners or collaborators. That's what we would call them today. They were doing collaborations. He was a carpenter. So-and-so was a tax collector. The tax collector had a knowledge of how government worked back then and tax systems worked back then. He had another partner or two or three that knew how. They were fishermen. They had resources. They had boats. That was their currency. They had nets. That was their currency and money. They knew how to fish. That was their currency and money. And social capital brought it all together. Those are some of the metrics that is laced throughout. In any holy book, you see the metrics. They don't explain it the way I'm explaining it, but those were the metrics. The last audio that we're going to go to, this is from the TV show also, The Wire, is, I should call this Mother of the Year. You're going to hear a dialogue between Detective Jimmy McNulty and Brianna. Brianna Barksdale is the mother of of D'Angelo. D'Angelo is the one that was telling, asking Stringer Bell, where's Wallace? And by the time he was saying where's Wallace, D'Angelo already knew that Stringer Bell had put a contract out on Wallace, D'Angelo's friend, and had Wallace killed. So in this scene with Detective Minolti and Brianna Barksdale, let me give a little bit of backstory on Brianna. Brianna grew up in the drug game. Her brother, Avon Barksdale is a real person. The TV show The Wire is fictionalized, but it's based on real people. In any event, Brianna, whose brother is a drug kingpin, Avon Barksdale, and his partner is Stringer Bell, also their partners in the drug enterprise. Brianna's wardrobe, the car she drives, the nice apartment that she lives in, a home that she has in Baltimore, Maryland, is all supplied by drug money in the form of United States dollars. She co-signed on her only child, D'Angelo, being in the drug game. She know that, matter of fact, she bought him lunch occasionally while he's on the job, you know, overseeing the drug operation and the projects in Baltimore. And her son, D'Angelo, gets popped. He gets busted with drugs in the car. And now, mind you, he's already got a prior record. So he gets arrested again. He just beat a murder charge. But Brianna and her brother, Avon, put him back into the game of selling drugs. Because, see, once again, Avon, her brother, pays for her car note, pays for where she lives, nice house, nice furniture, nice lifestyle, because her metric is government-issued legal tender, known as the United States dollar. Now, in order for Brianna to keep up that lifestyle, remember, her only child, D'Angelo, he got arrested. So he's about to turn state's evidence and turn everybody in, commonly known in the ghetto as snitching. Okay. But he was trying to get his life back because his metric, after he woke up, wasn't the United States dollar. That wasn't his primary metric in life anymore. He valued freedom. Freedom became his new metric. That way, more than the United States government-issued legal tender called the United States dollar. So he was about to turn state's evidence to gain some freedom. But Brianna found him, went to him while he was incarcerated, and talked him into taking a plea bargain and taking a 20-year sentence in prison so she, while living her lifestyle with the nice clothes, with the nice house, with the nice car, et cetera, that was her metric. So let's listen to the dialogue of Brianna and Detective McNulty, and let's see if she realizes where her priorities lie. Did she change her metric, and was she willing to change?
I called because I heard you went and visited Donette. Told him my son's death couldn't have been no suicide, is that right?
I did do that.
D'Angelo hung himself.
Not with the belt they found around his neck. Not at that distance between the doorknob and the floor.
So what are you saying?
What am I saying?
No. Nobody would have dared. My brother, his uncle would have...
I agree with you. Nobody would have dared. Unless...
Avon and Dee was family.
Family, right.
This is just you talking, right? I mean, anyone else saying it?
No, it's just me. No one else cares.
Right.
It's just, I don't know, on the inside. Somebody's going after you. He's got a beef, sees red, they use a shank. It's quick, and it's over. D'Angelo was strangled, which is planned. You need the time, you need the isolation. Look, I'm just sorry I brought this whole mess up to begin with, because frankly, no one's going to do shit about it anyhow. Whoever killed him wanted to pass it off as a suicide, and the cops are happy enough to have one less murder to investigate. On top of that, the Anne Arundel state's attorney doesn't give a fuck. I'm not supposed to give a fuck, so... guess your son just got squeezed between the sides.
Squeezed between what sides?
Look, 2 years ago, we hung more wire on your brother's crew than AT&T. And at the end, D'Angelo was this close to flipping, giving up everybody, everything. You know all that, right? You were the one who went down that detention center and talked your son out of a deal. I kind of liked your son, you know? All things considered, he was a pretty decent kid. And it grinds me that no one ever spoke up for him. Seems to me that nobody ever will. But mostly at this point, I'm sorry I bothered his girl. And I'm sorry she bothered you.
Why go to her? Why not come to me first?
Honestly? I was looking for somebody who cared about the kid. I mean, like I said... you were the one who made him take the years, right?
And Brianna on the visual sitting up there crying as she realized that her metric, her warped metric, her enslavement of money. She put money or United States legal tender above her only child. She can't put that on her brother. That's a man in the mirror, or in this case, woman in the mirror moment, because as he stated, she was the one that talked her son, her only child, into taking a 20-year prison sentence. 20 years out of his life, and he ended up losing his life, and he ended up being killed by her brother's business partner, Stringer Bell. That's who put the contract out on him, to have him killed in prison. So, all right, there's social capital. That's a metric of wealth. Another metric of wealth is, because we all got to eat. You know, a term I just made up today, veginaire. You know, How much food do you need to grow? Now, I'm not saying you need to, I mean, because when it comes to food, you can either grow it or you can catch it. If you're a meat eater, you're going to have to catch it or raise it or something like that. All right. Fruits and vegetables, you know, you can grow those. And it's sort of like generational wealth because, you know, a crop of tomato, you plant a tomato seed, it grows, it produces, you know, fruit, tomatoes, and then it keeps on after you have the harvest. It just keeps on giving. As long as you take care of the plant and nurture it, it's renewable. It'll keep on feeding you year after year, season after season, generation after generation. That tomato plant, that apple tree, that, for instance, where I'm at, we've got about 15 trees in the backyard here. Got three fig trees, and then a combination of citrus trees, which are grape, different types of grapefruit, lemon tree, lime tree, that type thing. It's been producing fruit for 25 years. Now I've got patches been producing a little bundle of pineapple. I get about 8 to 10 a year out of the pineapple patch. I got three of them, three patches. Let's see, one, two, yeah, three patches. I get about 10 a year, but it increases. Because it's real easy. You just lop off, you know, you lop off the top of the pineapple, and then you plant it, and then in about a year, they say sometimes 2 years, but here they've been coming in about a year. And I got some that I'm about to harvest. I've harvested one, and I got about four more that are ready. They're not quite ready to be harvested. I harvest them when they're still green, because if you wait until they start to ripen, then, the wildlife in the backyard gets to it. But in any event, you know, it goes from generation to generation. So you can be a veggie-naire, a millionaire. The millionaire metric is based on government-issued legal tender, specifically the United States dollar, the millionaire and the billionaire thing. But you can have, I mean, you can measure, look, you can measure your wealth in tomatoes, apple trees, kale plants. Name your fruit or vegetable. You can become whatever type of heir that you want, but it doesn't, you know, if you want to translate it into dollars, that's fine. But because most people are going out here working at 9 to 5 and getting that paycheck, and what do you do with that paycheck? You know, you're paying for accommodations, you're paying for food and water and all that. You know what? What if you knew how to drill your own well and harvest water that way? Then you automatically replaced the buying water at the store. Then you can even set it up as a side business. If you've got land, you can call yourself an acre heir. An acre of land, depending on what you put on it, can create a lot of wealth. So I consider an acre of land also a metric of wealth. Water is a metric of wealth, particularly if you know how to drill a well, or you know somebody that can drill a well for you, or you can harvest rainwater. These are all, you know, because if you don't possess those skills, or like say have an acre of land or something like that. And it all depends on what you put on it. Those are just different measurements or different metrics of wealth. What we want to do on here is, and this is what we want to do with offline events, is show people on, okay, wait, how, for instance, I love onions and peppers. Okay, so instead of, one of the things I want to do is instead of going to the store and buying them, is plant those myself so, I can have as much as I want. And then I'll probably give away the rest. But some people, you grow what you want, and then, some people, make extra money by, doing a farmer's market thing. Even with cyberspace, Mark Zuckerberg went into cyberspace, and I don't know how much he reserved the domain name Facebook for, Facebook.com, because a reserve a domain name might cost $5. If you want privacy controls, under $10. But he probably reserved the name Facebook.com for about $5, if that. That was his metric, reserving something in cyberspace, and now his net worth is $133 billion. But that's using the United States dollar metric. Now, that's what it's translated to. All right. Now, but let's go back now. Mark Zuckerberg took the metric of the domain name that he exchanged in exchange for, let's say, $5. He exchanged that and reserved the name Facebook.com. Then he went online with the website Facebook.com, because that's all Facebook is really a glorified website. And then in order for you to become a member, he gave away free members. They call them freemiums. He gave away free membership, and all you need to do is, sign in with your, email address. Sign in with your email address, and you make up your own password, and you're part of the Facebook community. Costs nothing. To us, cost him $5. I'm taking for granted the early version of the web of Facebook. He probably did all that web work himself. Now he had other partners, but then that's where we're going using that metric of social capital. In any event, we'll do more podcasts, live streams on the enslavement of money and wealth metrics. So you can, as Robin would say, become a millionaire, or a combination of using social capital, millionaire methodologies. For me, if I have 200 acres of land, that'll put me in the billionaire category for what I want to do. That's 200, and I got, how many more acres I got to go? I need 185 more acres. I need 185 more acres to be worth a billion based on what I want to do. So I go after acres rather than United States dollars. In any event, if you have any comments on the enslavement of money and what are your wealth metrics, 619-768-2945.
Don't let money through you. Honey, Everybody, this is Jay, and this video is about, is Tariq worth $2 million? Now, we all know that he's a damn fool, and he deserves what he's getting, but is he worth $2 million? Before we do, let's hit that like button. I need to get 200 likes for this video, and if you haven't already, please subscribe and bang that bell. I'm trying to reach 20,000 subs by the end of the month. Let's get into it. Now, Tariq, we all know, is a damn fool. He doesn't listen to Ghost or Tasha. And he's been corrupted by Kanan and turned against his father by Kanan and Tasha. And now he thinks that he's a dope boy when all he is a dorm room dope boy. He doesn't know anything about real life situations. And so he tried to get over on Vincent and the Olive Garden dope boy crew. And he bought some baby aspirin and tried to pass it off as being some pills, ecstasy, or whatever the case. And no, that would not work. If anything, he would have been better off trying to cut it. But he's an idiot. He knows nothing about this. He thought because they look similar that Vincent wouldn't know anything. And yeah, maybe with the eye test he wouldn't know. But once they began to sell the merch, then people would complain saying that these were duds, that the strength